the DEN File, the ultimate Broncos podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
All right, he is a host at Mile High Sports Radio in Denver, and you can follow him at R. Edwards Radio on Twitter. Ryan Edwards joins us today to talk about the Broncos. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Doing great, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. It's terrific for the Broncos this week. They answered a lot of questions. The Bengals stacked the box, 8-9 guys in the box, daring the Broncos to beat them through the air. Trevor Siemian answered with 312 yards and 4 touchdown passes. Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, each with 100 yards plus. Did the Denver Broncos basically make a statement that they do have a complete offense?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to assess what they did. You know, the fact is the Cincinnati Bengals, like a lot of teams, had a book on the Broncos. And the book was, hey, if you can stop C.J. Anderson, if you can stop this ground attack. Look, going into the week, the Broncos were the number 4 team in the NFL running the ball, and they're taking on the last place against the run team in Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati is going to improve that number, but the fact is that seemed like the way to attack Cincinnati. The Bengals knew that, and they kind of got ahead of it. They decided, look, we're going to shut down that run game, and they definitely did. 2.3 yards per carry for the offense, 52 total yards rushing. They dared Trevor Siemian to throw it, and what do you know? The guy was able to sort of put that together. You know, it was a simple fact also, you know, leading up to the game by where you have Demaryius Thomas, you have Emmanuel Sanders, both sort of calling out to the offensive scheme, calling out the coaching staff, calling out Trevor Siemian to a certain level, saying, hey, look, you guys got to start looking our way. And what did they do? You got 9 receptions for Emmanuel Sanders. You got 6 for Demaryius Thomas. Both guys getting over 100 and both guys getting in the end zone. I mean, at this point, you got to look at the Broncos and say they did maybe silence a few of those doubters, saying that they were only a defensive team.
I thought that was kind of fascinating when you brought up with Sanders and with Thomas sort of grouching about not getting the ball enough. That's something you wouldn't have heard them even dare say when Peyton Manning was in the building, but you have a young quarterback, and so things are a little different. But it seems to have worked because I don't know if it's exactly the receiver's complaints that sparred it, but the truth is that this ended up being a very interesting game. The Broncos they started out with 3 passing plays on their first 3 downs and were not afraid to push the ball down the field. And this wasn't, as much as a lot of people assumed, a dink and dunk type of game. Siemian threw the ball downfield quite a bit. You're talking about some long completions over the course of this game. You had Heuerman with a 29-yarder, Emmanuel Sanders with a 41, Demaryius Thomas with 55. Pretty fascinating that the Broncos turned this around. And in Trevor Siemian's case, Ryan, in the fourth quarter, when they originally down 17-16, Siemian's fourth quarter stats, 9 of 10 for 159 yards, leading them on those drives. This is a guy that only 3 games into his career is gaining a reputation as being pretty clutch in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no question about it. I think something like they're plus 32 or something. I mean, they have been unbelievable in the fourth quarter already, and we're only 3 games into the season. Well, Trevor Siemian and that offense needed to find a way to push the ball down the field. They just really did. It was only a matter of time. I mean, you're already seeing those. He'd thrown 3 interceptions coming into the game. 2 of them were quick screens, which is really hard to do. But they were, that variety of where he just wasn't pushing the ball down. Defenders weren't really fooled by anything that was happening. He had to start pushing those balls on the field because now defenses do have to play them straight up. And that's what, going forward, what the Broncos established with this game. Trevor Siemian, I think if nothing else, he has bought himself just maybe a little bit more. Those grumbles of Paxton Lynch that were starting to sort of show up here locally, you even had it in press conferences once in a while. I think that's going to be silenced for a little while now. For the entire season, I don't know, because they're not going to win every single game. But for right now, you could say that Trevor Siemian's the starter and really unquestioned, and you can see how the locker room's responding just in that post-game video that the Broncos posted.
Well, you have started out with 3 wins. You think about the Panthers, the Colts, the Bengals. Now, the Colts look pretty underwhelming, but it's not unreasonable to still think they could be a playoff team. You know, the Bengals have been the playoffs all 5 years in the last 5 seasons, and we know about the Panthers. Now it gets a little bit easier. You have Tampa Bay on the schedule next week, then the Falcons, and then the Chargers, who are all sorts of a mess right now and riddled with injuries. For the Broncos, if this ends up being a 6-0 or 5-1 start. I mean, the Broncos can realistically start talking about Super Bowl again, can't they?
I think they can. I think they can even have the conversation. I mean, they won't because, you know, it's 1 week at a time, one game at a time, that type of stuff. But, you know, I think it's fair to say because of the level of talent on this team that they've answered. Look, we said going into the season, most of us, that these first three games were such a test to the Broncos. And there was any predictions where they could be 1-2 out of these three games. And you're saying, I hope they get by the Colts because who knows what this offense is going to look like. Now they're 3-0 coming out of this. They got Tampa Bay. They got Atlanta. They got the Chargers. You're right. They're in position here where they can roll off. Now, again, they have to win these games. But they're in position, they have the talent to roll off these games. I think you can at least have the conversation about a playoff team and considering what the AFC really looks like right now. There are only a handful of teams. Again, you're talking about the Patriots, you're talking about the Broncos. The Steelers look terrible. They were one of my top three teams. They looked awful. So you're talking about teams that aren't, you know, and I don't believe in Baltimore. I don't know about you, but as far as I'm concerned, the Broncos are clearly the class along with the Patriots, and that right there makes them a contender. Now, home field is going to be a big deal, but again, we're only in week three. We got a little ways to go for that.
Well, the Broncos sitting seventh right now, giving up 306 yards a game, but still, as expected, terrorizing passers. Von Miller leading the league with 5 sacks. Shane Ray, by the way, jumped all the way to 5th in the league with his trio of sacks. This is a team that just wreaks havoc. Andy Dalton was the leading passer in the league in yardage, and for most of the game, right up until the last few drives, he was sitting at around 140 yards passing. This kind of defense, you would normally say it's not sustainable, but it does seem to be sustainable for the Broncos as long as they try to take away one piece of the puzzle. Maybe worth noting that even though they were really great against the run, Jeremy Hill had an awfully good game against them on the ground.
Well, he really did, and it started with that first drive where they basically ran the entire length of the field with Jeremy Hill. He ended up punching it in twice during the course of the game. You know, he has had good games against the Broncos. I remember a couple of years ago where he ripped off like a 75, 80-yard touchdown sort of to start off the game. He just, you know, he doesn't play great against everybody else, but somehow he has a decent game sometimes against the Broncos. You know, I think with the Broncos, and you know this because you cover the team, what they do is they deal with depth. You know, DeMarcus Ware goes down, and, you know, the question comes up, boy, how are they going to survive that? And then you think, wait a minute, DeMarcus Ware isn't even their best pass rusher. Von Miller is, not to mention the fact that they have two bona fide starters right behind him in Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett, not to mention the fact that Dakota Watson had such a great preseason. They're just fine in that position, and you saw that yesterday, Shane Ray being named co-defensive player of the week, along with Chris Harris Jr. They just do it with depth, and it's a reason why that their success is definitely something that can continue and sustain, because, look, you know, you can knock down one or two pieces. A couple guys go down, but then all of a sudden, a guy like Shiloh Kayao's out there making plays. Zaire Anderson was a special teams player of the week. And again, that's a guy that was pretty buried on the depth chart.
Yeah, rookie Will Parks getting a Johnny on the spot interception as well out there. And
yep,
the depth of the Broncos defense, pretty remarkable. So let's look at where we know the defense is out. Let's look where the growth goes in the passing game. Now, everyone's been focusing on Simeon and Simeon Malone, but maybe that hasn't been entirely fair. Benny Fowler, who had been injured in the preseason, the Broncos' third receiver, very effective even in the Super Bowl last time many people saw him. Fowler finally came back, got one catch, but the fact he was back on the field is promising. And the Broncos' high draft pick from last year, Jeff Heuerman out of Ohio State, finally made his debut, had one catch and a very important 29-yard pass play that really ended up being kind of the nail in the coffin at the end for the Bengals. How did those two guys, especially in the absence of Virgil Green due to his injury, change what Trevor Siemian can do?
Well, again, you know, those were important catches. You remember the Heuerman catch for 29? That was a big catch, a big point. They were kind of buried in their own side of the field, and he came up with that big catch. Benny Fowler coming with a nice catch. And they really do need to have some consistency at that third target. You know, early on in the season, the ball's been sort of spread around, and even in that game it was too. But then you saw the sort of concentration towards Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. You know, eventually teams are going to key on that, and they'll try to take those options away. And what will they do? What will the Broncos do? Most of us thought Virgil Green was going to be the guy that the expectation was he was going to be that consistent third target. It sort of has looked a little bit like C.J. Anderson at times. And then maybe that's the beauty of the Broncos offense to this point is they do have sort of some options when it comes to the third target. It would be great, though, if a guy like Benny Fowler, who really looks like the prototypical guy, can be involved. They love Jeff Heuermann. They hope Jeff Heuermann can be their most consistent pass-catching tight end for a long time. He just really hasn't shown any of that. This is his first game. So I guess those are things to build on, encouraging points for the Broncos in a win.
He is Ryan Edwards, host at Mile High Sports Radio in Denver. If you can't catch him locally there, make sure to catch him on Twitter, especially during game time. Ryan is a great follow during game time. You got to make sure you follow. Pure entertainment, I know from experience. So make sure you check him out on Twitter at R Edwards Radio. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Anytime, Sean. Take care, man.
That's it with the Broncos, and we will be back in just a moment with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate, the low expectation coming into this next game. And this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and We saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have 8 starters that were our former first or second round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to win 2 games. So, oh my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That, you know, that's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. and they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great, great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, that we or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play, I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England, and Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now, Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touches a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, it's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious, he has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in a, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Breeze is phenomenal. He is the franchise, but it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.